Welcome to The Courage Effect. I'm Suzanne Weller, and this is a show about growth and unleashing what's possible. You will hear inspiring stories about what courage looks like, how we navigate what's getting in our way, and the opportunities that surface when we choose courage over comfort. Let's get started. Hi, everyone. It's Suzanne. Welcome to The Courage Effect. This week's episode is somebody who I met a few years ago when I was experiencing her performing and her actually emceeing an event. My guest today is Bridget Quigg. Bridget Quigg is a longtime marketing director, improviser, and comedian who believes that improvisational theater principles can help people in the workplace to feel more confident and engage effectively with others. She's the creator of the Your Genius Workshop series and has led sessions for the Stanford Alumni Network, and she is an alum herself, and a few other companies you might have heard of, including Microsoft, Amazon, Zillow, Meta, and more. Bridget is the author of 3 books on creativity and intuition and has produced 5 one-woman comedy shows. Her work has been featured on NPR, in the San Francisco Chronicle, Seattle Times, and various theater blogs. Bridget, it is so wonderful to have you here. Welcome to The Courage Effect.
Hi, it's so good to be here. Thank you.
I'm harking back to, as I said, when we first met, and that was virtually when I was putting together, I was helping to curate a program for the Elevate Yes. Network, mm-hmm. and you were the MC for that. And one of the things that so impressed me out of the gate was that you owned the room. I mean, and we're talking about a virtual room, and that's, I think, even harder.
Fair enough.
Than any room in general. But there is a lot of courage that it takes to put yourself out there when you're doing theater and when you're doing improv. So I'd love to hear from you. How does courage factor into the work that you do?
That's a great point. Well, it's interesting, probably just you and I getting ready to get together and do this podcast, you get the nerves right before. And as I always tell people, it's because you care. And that's a good thing. So being nervous before you do something is just a sign that you want to do it well. And that's nothing to be ashamed of. We talked about this a little bit before, but I do find it is something people ask me a lot is how do you do the worst thing in the world, which is get up in front of people, not only to speak, but in a lot of cases, you know, promise them and they have to buy a ticket that you're going to be funny, right? That's a horrible, horrible choice for a human.
Yeah, why would you do that?
and I know exactly. Oh, no. But the thing that I recognize in that I love about your show is, and I was listening to past episodes, is there's all these moments leading up to those moments. We gain bravery, I feel, over time. And a lot of times we gain it because we don't do the brave thing. And that's something I think a lot of us are like, oh, I screwed up. I regret that I didn't go up and talk to that person or I didn't go after that job. And unfortunately, especially in your 20s, that's a lot of learning how to be brave. And I read about that. And I have a book called Your Intuitive, a guidebook to hearing your inner wisdom. And it's a whole portion on bravery because, connecting what's going on inside of you to the outside world is actually a really big job. And a lot of times when we don't do it, that's actually some of our best teachers, if you will. So basically for me, getting to the point where I could get up in front of people was a lot of open mics, both comedy and music. A lot of people being like, hey, would you just like, you know, would you MC my CD release party? It's like, I guess so. And I just got better at it and better at it. So by the time you saw me, I have a lot of faith in my ability to do so. So I'm thinking about refining the skill as opposed to, oh no, I'm going to flop. Does that make sense?
Yeah, definitely. And I like what you're talking about with just taking the risk, right? Like stepping out there and just getting there. And yeah, and there's always going to be those nerves. And even to this day, even when I do any sort of presentation, when I'm getting up on a stage, whether it's virtual or in person, there's still the butterflies that happen. And that was something that I had to work through over time, but just because it's there doesn't mean it's bad.
No. And it's funny. I'm actually remembering a moment. So for example, I got asked to do comedy at the GeekWire Summit back in, I think it was 2016, which is like such a cool thing. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I was, to this day, it was actually one of my more painful moments. And you can talk to John Cook about it. And, you know, the folks who brought me in, and because I had this great line ready for when I went up on stage, but this is a higher level of risk, right? As opposed to like the open mics and, you know, Sunday night acoustic showcase I did for a year or whatever. I played fresh songs every week. Like it was great for me. GeekWire, like, you know, so this man was up on stage in front of me who was literally curing cancer. You know, he was here from Fred Hutch, totally put together, amazing speaker, had a beautiful interview. And I came up on stage and all I wanted to say was, my name is Bridget Quigg. And I just want to make it clear to you all that I am not currently curing cancer. You know what I mean? Just as like to break the ice. It was a good line. It would have been funny. But I choked and I didn't do it. And I hit a like rough point. And I've always thought, oh, and I thought I was pretty far at that point. But that's just an example of you just keep doing it, basically. And you say the joke now next time you go up there. You know what I mean?
And you learn from choking.
You learn from choking. You do. And you have to trust that was just part of your path. And then you probably did a lot of things well too. So anyways, that's kind of, we can talk about more things, but that was just a story that came to mind that even when I was at the point where I was being invited to the GeekWire Summit to do comedy, I had a learning moment.
Yeah, undoubtedly. And I love that you're open to just talking about that and throughout, right? Because comedy is so risky. And as you said, I mean, like going up in front of a club is one thing, but when you're paid to do it in front of, you know, like a conference or a summit when it's an important high stakes place. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a certain amount of judgment going on. So how did you get into this? How did you, like, let's go back to your childhood. What were the things that really harked for you to become a performer?
Well, it's interesting too. I have to say right before I went up, a CEO of a major company, I won't say which one, in Seattle, we all had lunch together and he was literally like, I absolutely hate getting in front of people. Do you have any advice for me? Isn't that interesting? And he was probably in his 60s, right? He's like, why would you choose this? So it's everywhere. It's everywhere. I think I came from a highly comedic family. I believe you're a producer of your show and I connected. And for example, my brother, and I would say I did a show about this actually called Almost Female, A Jockhead's Awesome Journey, but it was about discovering who I was as a female. And I will just say in my family, it was more understood that men were funny. Fair enough. And I think that was kind of common in more traditional settings, which I basically grew up in. And I also think, I think I was waiting for my 30s my whole life. You know what I mean? I wasn't really a kid who was like, I just want to party and screw around. I had sort of an intensity to me, which has shown in my adulthood. I like to do a lot of things and be involved. So I had to, when I got to college, I think sort of discover myself. So you get away from what you came from and you discover who you are. So I think a lot for me was people being like, wow, you're funny. Right. And I was like, I am. That was a big, I can tell you many stories like that. And then having the bravery to get into music, for example, that was a safer thing. You do it as a group, learning an instrument. Oh, wait, I think I have a song in mind. I'm going to write that song. Oh, wow. Now I'm writing it down. Oh, wow. Maybe I'm going to try playing it for someone who loves me a lot. Now I'm being invited to maybe like just do a campfire scene. I'm going to play my original song, you know? And so those are those first moments. And you kind of don't do it that well the first time. And then pretty soon somebody's asking. So it's always this build and there's always a next risk. And I'm remembering when I finally got to my Techlandia show that I played downtown at the... what is it now? I'll think of it, but it's a theater. No, Theater Schmieder. It's no longer with us. Four of the five theaters I used for my shows are now gone in Seattle. That's a sign of the growth of Seattle, but growth in certain ways. But I remember laying backstage. I'd already had two great weekends. I'd just been on NPR. The place was packed so much that we were like kind of breaking fire code. And I was laying in the back with my feet up the wall, which is what I do to relax. And even then going out on stage, I thought I was going to throw up. And I also knew, and this is the thing I always tell people, once you get through, if you can just get through that, I think that's true for a lot of moments of bravery, that moment of like, I must be crazy. There's 10,000 places I could be besides this. Why would I ever choose to do this? You just have to push through that. And once you do, usually, honestly, it goes okay. And or you learn, which is also technically going to be okay. So, yeah, lots of repetitions. That's what I would say. Lots of repetitions.
Yeah. And sitting in it, allowing yourself to know that it'll pass.
It'll be like, especially open mic, you know, it's 3 minutes. They don't want you up there longer than that. Like you can get through 3 minutes of anything. So, yeah.
Well, I also really appreciate, you know, you owning your funny.
Yes, that was a big challenge. I did not call them comedic shows till the third one I started to use that word. The third one.
It was funny for yourself, you mean?
No, just when I advertised it, I advertised it as a comedic
show. Okay.
Or I called myself a comedian. That took years to promise that to people and own it, that it was going to actually work. There's a lot of faith in bravery, right? There's a sort of like, from where I am now to what I cannot see, I'm feeling, that's another thing I love, intuition. Like I'm feeling like this is possible. I'm feeling like I could do this. I don't understand how, but it feels right. And then, you know, booking the theater, writing the show, putting an advertisement, accepting ticket money, and still showing up and pushing through the vomit feelings and then going out there. It's all they're all just acts of bravery, all of them. It's I love the topic of your show, basically, because I think a life well lived for a lot of us, not everyone, is quite a brave life to be interesting to us, you know, to be satisfying, to actually dig up who we are and share it with the world. Because for someone else, it's taking the time to volunteer with certain, you know, kinds of people in certain difficult situations and thinking like, I can help these people. I'm not going to fail. You know, who knows what your bravery challenge is, you know?
Oh, your bravery challenge. That's great.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, and you've got me thinking too about, I mean, comedy is so wonderful. It's so, it opens you up, right? I mean, like when you experience it, I mean, it's such a wonderful thing to go and see somebody that makes you laugh and just to let go. So that must be an amazing, I mean, that must be a bit of a high for you. Totally.
Yeah. It's a huge reward. Huge reward. And in fact, I remember I was at a reunion for a camp I worked at in college, and I had this really kind of off color song. I will not do the lyrics for tonight, but that was kind of the scene. It was kind of funny to do this. But I remember I played two songs, actually. And this is all college friends who hadn't seen me for a while. And I remember my friend said, because people were laughing so hard, I got a standing O at the end. Wish I could play these songs, but it wouldn't be appropriate. But he goes, somehow you knew to stop and let us laugh. That's actually, once you get used to people laughing, you got to let them laugh. Everybody laughs together. And then you come back to what you were doing. It's sort of, it's great to hear laughter. And then that's yet another skill, how to not hurry through it. Let people have it.
Oh, that's amazing. This, and giving them the silence, creating the space to allow them to truly enjoy it without just powering through.
Another skill I had to learn. Yep.
Yeah, that's really powerful. Oh. Yeah.
I know, it gave me chills. That was interesting. I saw
that's my chill noise for all the listeners.
It's beautiful. Well, we're
going to take a quick break. But when we come back, I'd love to dig more into you putting on a show, because obviously putting on a show, as you said, takes a lot of bravery, takes a lot of work. And really the faith that it takes to actually create this in cities where theaters aren't, you know, they don't exist as much as they used to, as you said, with Seattle, which is sad. Yeah. So, for everybody, this is The Courage Effect, Suzanne Weller. We will be right back.
Asking questions is better than making assumptions, such as the premise of my show, Stacey Connects, a show about making connections through conversation. I welcome a diverse assortment of guests to chat about topics and ideas that are sometimes educational, sometimes inspirational, a little personal, and always entertaining. Every week, I draw out and befriend the elephant in the room so listeners can connect with the unexpected. Listen live Tuesdays from 3 to 4 on Alternative Talk, 1150 KKNW.
Have you ever wanted to go above and beyond for your community? Volunteering for your local fire or EMS department is your opportunity. Join a family that will serve with you, always have your back, and train you to be the best version of yourself. As a volunteer, you will meet new people, learn new skills, and make a meaningful impact. Learn more at makemeafirefighter.org. That's makemeafirefighter.org.
Broaden your horizons. You'll be amazed at all the topics we cover on Alternative Talk 1150.
Welcome back to The Courage Effect. This is Suzanne, and I am in conversation with Bridget Quigg. So, Bridget, we've been talking about being funny, like discovering that you're funny, owning funny, and performing, the courage that it really takes to perform. And obviously a big part of performing and of what you've done is putting on shows. And that takes a lot of commitment, a lot of time. Talk a little bit about how you've decided to do that and take that on and how courage is involved in it.
Totally. Well, I mentioned how I got to play the, so I started playing guitar after college, and my brother always reminded me my first song was Leaving on a Jet Plane, and I played it like 500 times. It's three chords. Most people can handle it, but it was a big deal for me to get all the way through a song, right? And strum it and the whole thing. But going from there, I joined some bands and was singing. And then I got this one night invited to a storytelling night. So this is back before The Moth. There was this group called The Guide to Visitors. So like Jeannie Andel and some of the NPR producers in there. My friend's like, you should get up on stage and tell a story. So this is another example of somebody saying, hey, you're funny, you could do this. And me being like, really, you think so? I have to say, honestly, crushed it. Like, people were rolling in the aisles. I didn't expect it. You know, I just told a story and it was, and so like, could you come back again? Could you come back again? And actually one of those stories was like picked as our all-time favorite. And I was asked back on the radio like 8 years later. But amazing. From there, I thought I could put a bunch of stories together and I could sing and I could make my own darn show. So I did it back in 2006 and it was very intimidating. I did it down at the Jewel Box. It's one of the great theaters left in Seattle that you can rent for not very much money and do your own thing down in Belltown. And so I got good at the process. I mean, I was using brown paper tickets. You know, back in the day, there wasn't as much social media. So I just wrote an email to people, you know, and emailed them a few times, probably recorded it on a cassette. Over time, it got better and easier because there were more resources and I had a little bit more of a following. But in general, what I do is I start with an idea. So for example, Techlandia, the last show I did, was about life at a startup. I play a bunch of characters. I wrote a bunch of new original songs. I had the audience sing some of the songs with me because that's fun to do. I also did one called Oh Seattle. But most of my shows are highly interactive and they have a bit of a variety show feeling. So I know I'm going to create some games that the audience will participate in, whether I bring one person down or have everybody play the game together. I know I'm going to write some songs. And so I kind of allow myself to play in the space, right? So for Oh Seattle, I wrote a song trying to rhyme with the word Seattle as much as possible. And one woman said she still has it on her desk like 5 years later because it made her laugh so hard to sing this song as a group. I handed it out to the audience. We all sang it together. So nice. It's just, so when I put a show together, it's truly to my great delight. Whatever is funny to me, whatever I think would be cool to like make fun of or do. I played this recruiter character in Techlandia. That one guy was like, I absolutely hated her the whole time he played her. And other people were like, oh my God, I know that person. But she was so darn perky and everything was great. And welcome here. And you can see over here, we have this engineer. He doesn't speak, but he has a full bar behind his desk because we need to keep him on staff. You know, that kind of stuff, like all the jokes of the tech world where there's just, you know, we gave him a tricycle because he likes to ride that to meetings. Like all the weird stuff that we do, you know, I just dug in. And why did I know it? Because I lived it my whole career. I was at all these little hot tech startups where just the weirdest stuff is going on. I had a joke about this news report where there's this van going around, you know, and kidnapping engineers and luring them in with pizza and Doritos and pop and large televisions and taking them
and Mountain Dew.
And Mountain Dew. And they just show up somewhere and they're like, well, I guess I work here now. You know, it's just, I don't know, man, I'm just going to code. It was, so it was just very, it was like catharsis to poke fun at it. And then of course, once I have it, but for that show, I booked that theater months in advance. I want to say at least five, but probably back, it was maybe it was eight. And I committed to 3 weeks, which was a big deal. So before I'd done 2 weeks, I wanted to do five. That's what my gut was telling me, but I didn't trust it. You know what happened right before 3 weeks? I got an NPR and I did such a great, I guess, interview. They played me again at the commuter hour. So I got all of this press, if you will, and then I had no more shows. So it's like that's one of those moments you go, I wanted 5 weeks. I could have had 5 weeks. So you learn next time I'm going to trust myself. But then other times I booked lots of theater and it hasn't filled up, but I didn't necessarily feel like doing that. So again, a lesson, but it was a lot of fun. That show I turned into a bunch of paid gigs during the holidays, you know, just doing comedy at holiday parties. But I guess I would say I create it, but I have to be thinking administratively well ahead of that. And I have to have faith. And like that show I wrote about a month and a half before I actually did it. So I just sat in the not knowingness.
That's and amazing.
Trusted it would come. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, so go finish your thought.
Oh no, that was it. I mean, I could talk about creating shows for hours. We only have so much time, but that gives you some kind of clue into the.
Yeah, I love that. Well, and obviously you do a lot of work also in businesses. And I know that we've also partnered on some work in that way too. So I'm curious for you, what is it like to go into that space? I mean, I know that, you know, you've talked about opening up risk for others, giving other people the space to play and to be delighted. How, when you walk into a conference room, a lot of people aren't expecting that. I'd love to hear you talk a little bit about that.
That's my big joke. One of my greatest moments was I was up at a hangar near the field up in Everett with this group of private jet pilots who are mostly military, both currently or retired. And the woman got up and she did me wrong. I love her to death. Actually, I know her. She's a wonderful person, but she said, Bridget's going to do improv with us today. Everyone tightened. Everyone's back went straight and no one would look me in the eye. Was no way on God's green earth they were going to do improv today. So I normally talk a little bit. I said, that's it. Let's all just get up on our feet. Everybody circle up. I need groups of 5 to 7 and we're going to start moving. Because I could tell I lost them at that point. So I do a lot of work physically. So I'll explain first. So the Your Genius Workshop and my whole theory of my work, whether it's intuition or creativity, is I say, I believe every person is a creative genius. And the reason I say that is because I had to learn in my 20s to hear myself and trust myself. And I found I was happier and healthier. And what I realized is that everybody has the capacity on some level to do that. We're all different. I'm not like preaching any sort of gospel, but I do believe that everyone has a role and talents and abilities, but a lot of people have had their ability to hear it / believe in it totally crushed. Let's be honest. It's, you know, I went to med school briefly because I thought I should, you know, I don't should on myself anymore. So in my sessions, what I like to do is, you know, remind people you have this deep well of creativity. It's unique to you. It's always there for you. And my opinion is the world needs to hear it. Doesn't mean you're allowed, but it means you're going to express yourself. So I do games and activities that increase in risk, if you will. So they just start by physically doing something. Everything is literally like PE. You could be in third grade and be having a blast. You just happen to be, you know, 45 with three kids working at your job. Like, why am I doing this right now? But it's an opportunity to put the phones down. Everybody gets together. And it's what I called structured fun. My friend Julie gave me that. And most people like structured fun. If you tell them, okay, these are the rules, you have this much time, da, 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 da. But what happens with the way that it's going on is they're actually the source of all the fun. So I create it where they have to share a line in a story, or they have to tell a little vignette from their life that picks up on a word from the vignette that they just heard. Or, you know, let's go on an adventure is the first line in one game. The next person has to say, yes, and yes, and we will go to Tahiti. Then they have to stop. There's a bunch of theory in this that basically you share to a point that is appropriate, which is part of the learning of being in a workplace, is you can't bulldoze people. But then there's other people who won't speak up. So the next person has to say yes, and we'll all wear matching sarongs and drink frothy drinks, you know? And that person may never say anything. And everybody's kind of like, hey, you just spoke up. That was really fun, right? So there's this wonderful egalitarian balancing energy. If you really believe that everyone has a place and a purpose and a reason for being, then you treat people with a lot of respect. And it's a lifelong process of discovering that part of yourself, you know, that matters so much.
Yeah, it really does matter so much. And that's, I'm so impressed with improv because it allows people to open up in that way. And exactly as you said, there's that shared, it's trusting your own intuition, but it's also that shared space that you're creating with other people where there's no judgment, like just go, you're co-creating. And there's something that's so magic about that.
Well, one of the great teachings of improv is make your partner look good. So as nervous as you are about your, you know, being stared at sweaty on stage, you're actually meant to be completely present and looking for what are called offers. So you're looking around at what anybody's doing. They could be tapping their foot. They could be frozen in fear. It's all an offer. So you're going to say, you know, it's just like, man, it's amazing how you can hold still. That's that physical therapy thing you're doing, right? You know, whatever, you know, it's just like, that's your surgery recovery practice, right? You have to hold still for 20 minutes. You know what it is? And now it's like, yeah, man, I think I'm through with this, whatever it is. You know, I think I'm in full recovery now. So I'd really like to dance, you know, and then the scene goes that way. But you get the idea. There's no mistakes, actually. There's no failures. You're constantly picking up the offer. It's a beautiful life theory, you know, and it's really good in the workplace.
Yeah.
Where people can forget to cherish each other, to put it nicely.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and yeah, and appreciate each other. And what about, so obviously when you're doing, I mean, comedy, you have hecklers, but I mean, I would imagine too, that when you do something, any sort of activity, you know, people have, somebody's sitting there like a stump with their arms crossed, like, oh, great. Mm-hmm. Any tips on how to bring those people into the fold?
I know, right? Well, there's natural peer pressure. Most people at the companies are being paid to, you know, there's a desire to cooperate on some level. I have had some tough characters. There's one woman she was a hospital inspector. I had a group of, I've had accountants, you know, and she really had trouble engaging. I just let it go at a point. I let their peers figure it out. People work around it because, you know what, the rest of them are probably having a great time. And if frumpy wants to be frumpy, let her be. I'm not going to give her more attention than she deserves. I might check in, but then I'm going to let it go and just keep moving forward. And I always tell people, if you really need to, you can sit out and watch, you know, but I don't take a lot of responsibility for it, I think. And 99.99% of the time, people can't help themselves. They're in and they're just laughing. You know, most people want to just have fun.
Yeah, they want to let go. I love that you're not putting too much energy into that person, because I think we tend to do that, right? It's like the squeaky wheel gets the most. Yeah, it's like, that isn't always the best plan, because then you're forgetting about all the other people that are there. So
yeah, I'm really not a fan of over helping people who don't feel like it's cool, you know.
Yeah.
Have your day.
Yeah.
And really no judgment. Like, I don't know what's going on in your life. I don't know your childhood. I don't know what you've been through, you know. So I'm not going to push you that hard.
Yeah. And what about doing it virtually? That's the other thing is that are there any specific techniques that you do when you're doing it virtually versus in person?
I mean, when I think about virtually, I think about, it's all a balancing act, right? Facilitating, emceeing, reading the energy of what is going on. But I would say part of what's doing online is you're often getting notes, you know, or feedback from whoever's running the show. And that can, so you have to balance mentally, I would say a little bit more when you're online. But I feel similar in that I think a lot of what works for me as an MC, if you want like my tips and tricks, but I'm good at noticing what someone did well. Or if something didn't go well, I can totally poke at it in a way that everyone would understand, right? So there's almost zero critique coming for me. And there's a lot of, hey, isn't this cool? Isn't it amazing? We're all here. That was incredible. To imagine to have the bravery to share what you just shared. I absolutely loved it. And I especially liked the part. And I related to the part about your siblings. That I think all of us can get that. So I'm looking for what's relatable, what's pleasing, and just... Because there's no point in not doing that because God bless that person for doing what they're doing and speaking up. And also as an MC, you're neutral. You don't have an opinion. Yeah. You're just there to make sure everybody feels welcome and that we stay on time. I mean, there's a bunch of administrative work an MC is doing that if you get into some sort of argument with one of the speakers, the wheels are fully off at that point. You know, you're supposed to be keeping the wheels on. So so online, it's still an energy read situation. Sometimes you have to cut people off, which can be hard online. Anyways.
Yeah,
I have tons of thoughts on that topic. Interesting.
And of course, as you say that, I'm like, and as we wrap the show.
Mm-hmm. And having full respect for timing. That's a big part of being an MC.
Well, and thank you so much for also acknowledging like the importance of acknowledging others and the contributions that they do. Because when people are putting themselves out there, I mean, it's so easy for us to be the critics, right? In the cheap seats, as Brené Brown calls them. It's so easy for us to do that. How do we change that up and actually acknowledge what people are bringing? So, thank you so much. I want to go over a couple of key takeaways that I got from our conversation. Building bravery, you know, it's the small acts and it takes something, you got to keep going. And you really have to choose to do the hard work. It is a choice to do it or not. And a lot of the time, trusting your gut and having faith is a big part of that. And learning from when you didn't, how might you have done that differently the next time? And you also said, we're all creative geniuses. I love that.
Yes.
So how are you, you know, working with yourself and giving other people the opportunity to actually release that creative genius? So thank you, Bridget, for all the work that you do.
My pleasure. Thank you, Suzanne.
Such a pleasure to have you. Best way for people to get in touch with you if they want to reach out?
www.bridgetquig.com. I have a contact page. You can send me an email and I will write you right back.
Great. We'll make sure that's on the Courage Effect website. Bridget, thank you for a great conversation. Thank you everybody for listening. We will talk to you soon. Stay courageous.